we may be looking at a scenario here where it becomes less and less affordable for people to live here and for businesses to create jobs here. And that just means they'll go somewhere else. For every dollar that goes into a rate increase, whether it's the property tax rate or utility rate, that's one less dollar that they have to create that next job. And so obviously that's concerning to us.
Saskatoon Chamber of Commerce CEO Jason Abig there. We also heard yesterday from Keith Moan, the executive director of the North Saskatoon Business Association, both very concerned about that tax increase that we learned, 6.7% for 2026, 5.81%. These are the mill rate increases for 2027 coming out of the Saskatoon City Council deliberations last week and ultimately where they landed on the budget. If that's what you want to talk about, we can go there. 1-877-332-8255. The phone lines are officially open. And Rick was the very first caller on the road ready to talk about this bump in taxes in Saskatoon. I appreciate you calling in today, Rick. What are your thoughts?
Hey Evan. So basically, I'd like to thank Justin for this information. But every person that was speaking on behalf of sections of the city of Regina, whether it's Indigenous services or transport, that kind of stuff, it listed the salary that those folks make below. So needless to say, a lot of them were well and beyond $100,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is far from the poverty line, if I stand correct. And maybe we have to look internally. Like the guy last week said, where it took the four city workers to fix that tree or that sidewalk or whatever it was, maybe we got to start smacking mosquitoes on the inside of the building than worrying about the mosquitoes outside of the building.
Okay, I got your analogy there, Rick. I got your analogy. So you're basically talking about the number of employees or the wages made by employees that work for a city? Or
I
both?
I would say both.
Oh, both, yeah.
So, I mean, indirectly, I'm a hardworking fella. I don't make anything near that. But I do the best I can, and that's the way it goes. Where for these people, I mean, they do have important jobs. I will not discredit them at all. But where do you draw the line about what the correct wage is? I mean, a livable wage is well under $100,000, in my opinion, so...
Yeah.
City councilors only make, I believe it's in the 50s of thousands of dollars, plus if they still have their current job. I mean, it's, where do you draw the line, right? Everybody wants a bigger slice of the pie, and what do you do?
That's a pretty honest take right there, Rick. I appreciate you calling in. I appreciate the balance and the thoughtfulness of your talk. So thank you for the call. And we did yesterday when we had the open lines, we got into a very deep discussion about essentially taxes. And it wasn't just about Saskatoon. There were lots of callers from Regina, other communities as well. But taxes and the implication it has on our cost of living, there were a couple of people suggested it's time for a complete audit. Let's audit every area within the city. Do we need all of the people that we have there? Are we being as efficient as possible? That's something that came out. But yesterday, hearing from both the organizations in Saskatoon that represent the businesses, they are a bit frustrated as well. They say that it didn't feel like city council kept affordability front and center. It was more about the revenue side of the ledger versus trying to find intentional cuts or savings. So, you know, the worry is, what does this do to businesses? And if businesses start to move away from the city, move outside city limits, that obviously has implications on tax base, has implications on new people coming to the community. So lots of people will focus on that. And I mean, and don't get me wrong, both of these organizations, the NSBA and the Saskatoon Chamber of Commerce, acknowledge that, yeah, there's inflationary costs, increased property taxes are, you know, that is something that is the revenue that comes in to help pay for these services. But I think it was Keith Moan that said these are like pebbles in the backpack of businesses. You know that analogy where the business has a backpack on and every challenge, whether it's tariffs from the states, whether it's trade challenges, whether it's supply chain issues or taxation levels, these are pebbles in the backpack. And eventually the backpack, it gets too heavy to wear. And so maybe this one doesn't break the business, but it is another pebble in the backpack is the analogy that was used there. Well, open lines can be anything and everything. 1-877-332-8255. By the way, take care on the highway if you are out and about. I know we got a text here from Sean coming from Moose Jaw. He said, highway number one west of Moose Jaw, incredibly icy. I just did a check of the highway hotline, and there are lots of highway bits and pieces in the province that are listed as being completely covered with snow and or ice. None of them listed as travel not recommended. So I would suggest this is winter driving conditions for the most part in the province, but not a bad idea to check the highway hotline if you have to head out. Okay, let's go to the phone line. I'm going to grab this call from Perry from Osler. Thanks for calling in, Perry. We've talked a lot since last week about this pipeline deal. It was Thursday officially inked between Carney and Alberta Premier Danielle Smith. You don't see this as a big deal, as a big success.
No, and you know, when you sit back and you think about something for a whole week, then all of a sudden you start to see the game. It's just political theater. He wants to show that he's, you know, a little bit more moderate, warming up to the West, because we're talking about looking at separation and that. So I better warm up. But she goes, well, if I totally shoot down this proposal, I'm the one that looks negative. And I caught it all started to make sense to me when I seen she signed off on if the industrial carbon tax increases, they will accept that with this pipeline. And so then I knew she knows the pipeline's never going to happen under the Liberal government. She knows you won't even get through court in 7 years' time in D.C. So just political theater.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting the point you bring up, Perry, about her signing off on the industrial carbon tax, because, of course, she's been an opponent of that and against that for quite some time. She was quizzed by Vashi Kapelos, I saw late yesterday afternoon on that issue, and, you know, talked about it being part, it's baked into the overall deal. Is this the be-all, end-all? Is this going to get across the finish line? It's kind of I can't even remember who I saw say this on the text line yesterday, but it's a deal to strike a deal, but it's a long way from there. There's a lot of things that have to happen, and they've got to be able to get through BC yet, which is not a given. Speaking of the federal government, cabinet shuffle came late yesterday afternoon. Stephen Guibeau departed. Is there anyone, by the way, that was more disliked as a federal politician from what, like, from those of us in Western Canada than Stephen Guibeau? I was talking with a buddy of mine yesterday who is a fairly strong Liberal supporter, and he was glad to see Stephen Guibeau go, right? So you know the majority of people in our province who probably don't have that Liberal lean to them were very happy to see Stephen Guibeau go. Now, though, he's been replaced with Mark Miller. That's a name you'll remember because he was a minister under Justin Trudeau. In fact, he was the immigration guy. Some people will say he was finally making some positive strides on immigration before he was removed from that portfolio. But as part of this cabinet shuffle, Mark Miller has been appointed as the Minister of Canadian Identity and Culture and Minister responsible for official languages. So is that good? Is that a good trade? We traded Stephen Guibeau for Mark Miller. Is that a good trade? I mean, I feel it is. I feel you could put any name in place of Stephen Guibeau and it was good for us. Good for us in the West. Time will tell, I guess. Other couple of shuffles, Minister of Government, Transportation, Public Works, and Procurement, Joel Lightbound. That's a name not many people knew, Joel Lightbound. He's the guy, though, that was handling the Canada Post file. He's the one that introduced, okay, here's the measures that we need to take, changes to the business model of Canada Post to make it more sustainable. That was Joel Lightbound. He is now taking on a larger portfolio. He's assuming the role as Quebec Lieutenant, which is an important, that Stephen Guibeau is in that position. And of course, this is keeping the Quebecers happy. That's going to be Joel Lightbound now, while Environment and Climate Change Minister Julie DeBrusen will now inherit the nature file as part of that. And I'm not convinced she's a lot different than Stephen Guibeau, if I'm being honest, but I guess we'll see. John Iveson, I always get a kick out of reading John Iveson's articles in the National Post. He had an article in the National Post yesterday talking about Prime Minister Mark Carney attempted the political equivalent of crossing the Niagara Gorge on a tightrope. So basically, you know, he's talking about the fact that his platform, the Prime Minister's platform, on one side has things like strengthen the CBC, bolster equality and charter rights, additional funding for LGBTQ programs. But at the same time, he's increased the defense spending. He's striking a controversial agreement with Alberta on a pipeline. So he is literally walking that tightrope, which is moving that federal Liberal Party towards the center of the political scale. How far? I guess we can argue that back and forth. But it's a great article by John Iveson about the tightrope game that Mark Carney is walking. And essentially in his article, he says he hasn't fallen yet, but he's a long way from crossing the gorge. So is he going to make it across on this tightrope? Is he going to be able to do this, continue to do this going forward? Great question. And I would I'd be curious to know your thoughts on that. 1-877-332-8255. Okay, let's take a break. I know I've got a couple callers on the phone line, lots of texts coming in as well. We will have open lines right until 10 o'clock. 1-877-332-8255. We'll be right back here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Hits you when it's too
late. Hits you when you're done. My heart sank. I've called over 30 clinics and I either got scoffed at, laughed at, and honestly, it was so disheartening. I was just beside myself because it's like I'm now on the phone trying to talk to any sort of doctor who will take me on. This isn't just an inconvenience for me, it's catastrophic.
Medical challenges, of course, continue in the province. We talk about that a fair bit, whether it's in smaller communities that have to close emergency departments for personnel reasons from time to time, or in some cases, and that was the case we just heard of a patient who had her doctor's office completely shut down and left her without a doctor, which is a problem that many people in the province are continuing to struggle with. Whatever it is you would like to chat about, I'm here to talk to you about that. 1-877-332-8255. The MOU between Prime Minister Mark Carney, the federal government, and Danielle Smith, the Premier of Alberta, and the Alberta government, many people say is a foundational for a pipeline to actually be built. There's lots of optimism from some people that it will work. Others calling it, and I had Perry on the line moments ago saying this is all just political theater. I want to go to Jason in Weyburn. How do you see this MOU, Jason?
I come at it with a grain of salt, but I can't help but be hopeful. It's Danielle Smith's job to get her product, her province's product to market. And it looks like she's pulled together the stakeholders in Alberta and basically told them, hey, we got to move on this. Let's do some environmental stuff. Yes, we don't believe in it. We're going to have to compromise. Look at the 9 bad bills that she wanted gone. She got 7 of them taken off. So I can't see this as anything else but a win. Now the hard work starts. But one thing about Danielle Smith is, do not underestimate that woman. Mm-hmm. She knows what she's doing, and she's very, very good at this.
It's, will she be able to negotiate with David Eby, the Premier of BC? What is the federal government's role going to look like? We know they've got the ultimate say, right? When we've got projects like this that cross from province to province, the federal government has the final say on it. Will they use that, basically, to step over top of David Eby and to make this happen? Of course, there's going to be a lot of conversations before then, but time will tell. The other side of this is the people that say, look, this is smoke and mirrors. This is nothing more than that. And I have a sense that's where our friend Cal from Oxbow is about to go. Am I right, Cal?
You are correct. I love the last caller's sense of optimism.
He's from your neck of the woods. He was calling from Weyburn.
I know, and that's great, and I hate to be the crusher of that optimism, but look, you might throw me into a little bit of Kevin's realm here right now.
Conspiracy, Kevin?
Because I believe that all Carney's, this tightrope walking that you use that analogy, that's political theater to me on both sides. because if you listen to what Carney says, there are a couple of things that really made me nervous about things that he said. First of all, the MOU continues to push things like net zero and all of these other things. They're bullet points that are in there. Plus, if you remember when he was in the UAE, he talked about our pension funds. So I did a little bit of digging into all of this, Evan, and I've got like 50 bullet points, which you won't let me get to, but that's fine.
Hit on the big ones.
And you can check my facts. But if you look at things that happened there, Bruce Flatt was in the UAE, the CEO of Brookfield, 6 days before Carney. Hard to believe that that's a coincidence. And then Carney's G fans in the UK, his net zero thing collapsed when the U.S. started investigating anti-competition. Guess what? Carney moves to Canada, starts pushing green energy again. The Liberals create this Canadian Growth Fund, which Brookfield made an initial investment in.
Yep.
And he wants to use these pension funds as a way to get places like the UAE to invest, because then we as taxpayers take all the risk. These guys get nothing, and then Carney gets paid out from Brookfield, and some of the numbers are as high as $750 million to $1.2 billion that he can front-end load on this stuff. So I don't know. Is Carney in it for Canadians, or is in it for him to become a billionaire?
So, you know, Daniel Smith was asked yesterday by Vashi about whether or not pension investment would be part of it. And really the question was, will taxpayer dollars be funding any of this pipeline? And Danielle Smith, I think, stepped into whether or not you see investments from pension funds yet to be determined, but you have to create an atmosphere that makes it an attractive investment for them. So she kind of sidestepped the answer there when asked. Okay, 1-877-332-8255. I made statement that I'm not a fan of Stephen Guilbeau. I was glad to see him gone. I thought anybody's better, including Mark Miller, although some will argue maybe he's not. I want to go to Brett calling in from up north in Saskatchewan today. Is Mark Miller better or worse than Guilbeau on cabinet there?
I don't think it should be lost that he was part of the SNC-Lavalin affair cover-up and scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a question you'd probably be able to answer. Is he now or was he then part of election reform, or is that the other guy?
Mark Miller?
Yeah.
I don't remember him. I mean, he was involved in the immigration file. That was his last file right before, but...
They moved two guys, so maybe it's the other guy. Anyways, another question I have that you might be able to have some clarity on, and maybe it's funny your last guy just brought up Kevin, Conspiracy Kevin, because maybe this is something Kevin can look into too. Is it just me, or was Mark Carney never actually an elected official or elected MP when he took over from Trudeau to begin with? So how is that legit?
Yeah, you're right. He wasn't. He was elected at the during the election, but he was named a leader of the Liberal Party while not being an elected official. And the rules do allow that. There's lots of other examples, but there are other examples of that happening. He then stepped into the election and won the seat, but it is possible for him, the rules allow him to become the Liberal leader and thus essentially the fill-in prime minister until such time an election is held. So it does allow that to happen. Appreciate the call on that. Okay, let's take a break. I still got some calls coming in and lots of texts I want to get to. Open Lines continues here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.
Obviously, it's been a long road over the last few months, but we're extremely happy that the work is completed. It's open for business and for the holiday season where everyone can come down and enjoy the area. If you look at Nudney now, compared to what it was, we've got water, sidewalks, we've got areas for patios, just the whole visibility of the area. So we're encouraging everyone to come down. And this is not just a pretty project, it also is make sure that the area is safe. So we've got safe crosswalks, we've got our lights flashing here in red, and they're doing that for a reason.
That's the rebuild of Dewdney Avenue in Regina, and they did a good job. I mentioned when I was at Agribition, I took a cruise by. It wasn't open yet. Took a cruise by Dewdney Avenue, and boy, it is. They've done some great things there. So I'm going to say tip of the hat to the construction crews and the workers in Regina that were part of making that better. So good for the businesses that have kind of gone through a year of challenge, to say the least, while that construction was going on. Speaking of challenge on the highways, Brad saying Highway 11 from Saskatoon to Regina, not a problem at all. He's been driving it. But we've got another one here, message from Clint from Warman, Highway 312 from Rosthern to Waka. Way more snow than ice. Hardly any pavement can be seen. Way more snow and ice than pavement is what he said. So take care there. And the highway between Belle Plaine and Regina, a couple vehicles in the ditch, both with trailers, Jason and Regina, sharing that. And then at the end of his text says, and why can't we have city workers capping their income at $100,000? I think that would be a way to save some money. Jason, thanks for your text. 1-877-332-8255. Lots of people say, yeah, Mark Miller, no better. Steve from Keniston said, Evan, you're 100% wrong. And what I said was, I think Mark Miller's better than Stephen Guibeau. Stephen Guibeau, to me, set his sights on oil and gas, basically did everything he could to try and kill that industry. Every law, every regulation. So I'm saying goodbye, Guibeau. Mark Miller certainly would have been in my top 10 choices, but better than Guibeau? Steve from Keniston says no. He's no better. And there's a lot of people that are suggesting Mark Miller not the choice. People frustrated with Mark Carney, too. A lot of people saying, I expected good things, even though I wasn't a Liberal supporter. I expected good things with Mark Carney. However, what I've seen so far, he seems to be staying true to his Liberal roots. An anonymous texter there. There are people, though, that are not necessarily Liberal supporters, might have supported and voted Conservative, yet think that Mark Carney's not doing a bad job. I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but Corey from Saskatoon, is that where you're at on this whole situation?
Yeah, it's a breath of fresh air for sure as a Conservative supporter. The nation-building projects that Mark has brought up are quite intriguing, and I think it's a broader scope, to use that term, of where we can go with nation-building, from social programs to clean drinking water, not only just infrastructure programs, but I like the term. I think the term is interesting, and I think we can do that as an elbows-up program.
Mm-hmm. And you feel as if Mark Carney is leading us in the right direction?
Well, like I said, a breath of fresh air to actually contribute to the West.
Right.
I mean, it's definitely a change from the previous administration, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I think it's a positive, and I think we have to do like Danielle Smith is doing, and even Scott Moe, is that we're going to accept whatever they give us, because we've been given nothing but a cold shoulder in the past.
Yeah, you're definitely right, Corey. That's the attitude that Premier Moe is taking. He's saying this is the best relationship we've had with Ottawa in a decade. And many people, like Corey, refer to the past administration or the past version of the Liberal government without coming out and saying the name Trudeau, although I did see on the text line, Tim from Regina said, I saw this the other day, but I decided the walk down memory lane would just make me angry, so he didn't buy it. But it's basically a game called True or False. It's got a picture of Justin Trudeau on it. True or false, and it's basically cards where you have to guess whether the story is actually true or false about Justin Trudeau and the federal government. Scandals that are Justin credible, it says on the box of the card game. Thanks for the text. 1-877-332-8255. Phone lines remain open. We chatted last week a fair bit about rent control. This is an idea that was brought forward by the provincial NDP. We know Carla Beck had talked about that. We have had a number of people that have reached out to the program. In fact, during open lines, a number of people that said rent control is not the way to go. It's a temporary fix to something that will actually cause long-term problems. And now I've got caller James on the line, worried about what sort of consultation was done before this proposal came forward. James in Regina, go ahead.
Hey, good day, sir. Thanks so much for your show. I find it interesting that Ms. Beck believes sometimes what she's actually saying. There's one of the your provincial independent landlord association, you know, has about under 200,000 people. Sorry, about under 2,000. Sorry, under 2,000 person. And there was a poll that not one single person was consulted on control. And I find it interesting that, you know, it's a basic grade math. It's common knowledge now that we pay more in taxes and food thing shout.
You're cutting out a little bit on me, James. Sorry, we've just got a bit of a bad phone connection there. But your point is well taken around. I mean, we had Landon Field on with the Rental Housing Saskatchewan group last week. He's the CEO of that group. He was not in favor of rent control. And many people would say, well, not surprising, a landlord organization wouldn't be. But I can't tell you who was consulted with. I know the NDP did say they had consulted with people. They certainly consulted with renters. There's no question about that, because they had renters with them at the ledge when they were making this announcement, when they were pushing for this bill to go through. Nothing voted on yet, obviously, with regard to this rent bill that was brought forward by the NDP. I actually noticed I got a message on LinkedIn from one of the leaders with Boardwalk. So Boardwalk is obviously a company that has multiple properties. And this fella, Sam, I think was his name, said, I'd be more than happy to talk with you from our perspective on this. So safe to say we will be talking rent control more in the weeks, days and weeks ahead. We'll bring on various different people to talk about it and look at it from different perspectives. But James, I appreciate your text, your call, sorry. 1-877-332-8255. Whatever is on your mind, whatever you would like to chat about, I'm happy to hear from you. Cameron in Regina, H&R Block said that 85% of Canadians are living paycheck to paycheck. City councils are completely out of touch if they think property owners can keep absorbing these types of massive tax hikes. And then he goes on to say, by the way, 85% is up from 60% in the same survey done last year. It feels like we're headed towards a cliff. This is Cameron in Regina. So 85% of Canadians are living paycheck to paycheck. That according to a recent report done by H&R Block. Those tax hikes that we saw in Saskatoon. And I hate to say it, I don't want to foreshadow anything. And I could be proven wrong by Regina City Council. But it looks as if 6.7% increase that Saskatoon has determined will be their mill rate increase for next year is very low compared to what Regina's. They're projecting something right now around 16%. Now, they start budget deliberations, I think, the week of the 15th of December, and no doubt they will land on a number that is lower than 16%. But even if it's 5% lower, it's still significantly higher than what they've got and what they're facing in Saskatoon. So I can only imagine the conversations you and I are going to have as that is happening, and that, by the way, happening right before Christmas. Okay, we'll take our last break and we will come back, finish up our open line segment. We got a full morning. We're going to be talking at 10 o'clock with the CEO of Max Power Mining Corporation. So this is the organization that has now drilled Canada's first natural hydrogen well. Is this a good energy source? Is this a great energy option? There's lots of pros. But there's a few cons as well, and cost is a big part of it. I'm curious to know what investment has looked like so far. Ranjith Narayanasamy has just been named as the CEO of this organization. Ranjith is a good friend of our program. We've had him on many times. Don't forget, he was with Sask Power back in the day. Recently, he has been president and CEO of PTRC, Sustainable Energy in Regina. So everything from enhanced oil recovery to carbon capture. People in the energy industry love Ran, and he's a very positive, optimistic guy. So I'm looking forward to that chat coming up at 10 o'clock this morning. We'll take a break. We'll come back, finish up our open line segment. More time for you to get through here on either the text line or the phone line, 1-877-332-8255. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Hey, every day we're getting phone calls, we're getting emails of families who are struggling and just needing some extra help. It pains us to not be able to help every family in need.
We got just over 3,200 kids on our letter register so far. We've brought in about 1,000 toys so far. You know, we're still quite a ways away. So our hope is, you know, that we'll come over and above what we need, and then we'll start reaching out to those families that are on our wait list and start helping those families too.
That is Santa's Anonymous, of course, so run out of Regina. It's a long-time institution that CJME in Regina has been associated with, and collecting toys, Christmas gifts for less fortunate children, and what a great, this has been decades long, this program, and it does very, very well. So thank you to everyone who chooses to give, whether it's to Santa's Anonymous or any of the many charitable organizations and opportunities you have this time of year. Giving is at a premium. Hey, by the way, Giving Tuesday today. So a great, great opportunity to make a difference in your community. And thanks to those that do. 1-877-332-8255. So we were chatting just before the break. I had James on the phone from Regina talking about the fact that he was a bit frustrated. He didn't feel like there was a lot of necessarily consultation done by the provincial NDP when they talked about bringing in rent control. And he and I were having a bit of a back and forth on the text line too. Basically, his point is it's common knowledge that Canadians pay more in taxes than we pay in food, clothing, and shelter. So James's point is the problem isn't what we're paying for rent. The problem is government thinks it's acceptable to take half of everything you earn and then somehow make you think that this makes sense and is acceptable. If you think about what we pay in taxes, and this, of course, comes back to that premise that there is one taxpayer, and that one person, you, pays federal taxes, provincial taxes, municipal taxes, and at the end of the day, left with whatever you're left with, trying to carve out a life, which can be really challenging. Cost of living right now is at a premium in much of Canada, and that's essentially what we talk about many, many times. Jeff in Saskatoon, kind of further to the general conversation about the cost of living, Jeff says there's a basic disconnect here. We supposedly live in one of the richest countries and provinces on earth, and yet every day the headlines are about healthcare, mental health, homelessness, firefighting, highways, infrastructure. All of these are money issues. Both the province and the federal government are running deficits. Where does the money go? Jeff says either we're broke or rich. We can't be both unless there's theft going on. How does a country, this is again Jeff out of Regina, how does a country with no natural resources, oil, uranium, potash, lumber, coal, agriculture, exist if we can't do it in Saskatchewan and continue to run a deficit? 1-877-332-8255. Welcome to call in. Welcome to text in. We got lots of different things that we've been talking about. Hey, in the category of where are they now, former Regina Mayor Sandra Masters just announced that she has a new job with the provincial government, part of Premier Scott Moe's staff. She's going to be handling, basically, she'll be the lead for communication for the Premier and the government of Saskatchewan, her title, Deputy Chief of Staff Communications. That was just announced yesterday by the provincial government. So I did a bit of a tease to this earlier, but I am looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have coming up just after 10 o'clock. When we think about energy sources in Canada or energy sources in the world, we know that here in Saskatchewan, we are the hub for many of them. Number one, oil and gas. Our oil and gas industry is alive and well and continues to do well, even though we fought some ugly federal regulation for a while. We're still continuing to forge ahead. And on that note, by the way, Brian Zinchuk will be on the program tomorrow for his regular monthly visit. So we'll have lots of good talk about oil and gas and even this pipeline with Brian Zinchuk tomorrow morning. But when we think about energy production, of course, lately we've talked about nuclear and the uranium that we have here, the role that Cameco plays. That's been a big topic of discussion and what that transition in Saskatchewan will look like. What we haven't talked a ton about is hydrogen and the importance of hydrogen. This is not a new concept. The thought of using hydrogen to fuel, whether it's vehicles or buildings generating electricity, is not new. But it isn't something that has been explored a lot until now. Max Power Mining Corporation here in Saskatchewan has Canada's first natural hydrogen well. Ranjith Narayanasamy, who is a good friend of our program, is just named the CEO of this corporation, and he is standing by. He's going to join us in studio for a great conversation about the role hydrogen can play in energy production. That conversation is coming up next here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.